give a talk here. So the talk today reflects one of my major research efforts. So basically galaxy clustering. And I will tell you how to study galaxy evolution from galaxy clustering. So the work covered in my talk is done in collaboration with many people, as listed here. Galaxies are the basic unit in our understanding of the structure formation in the universe. Understanding galaxy evolution is one of the contemporary, one of the major themes in contemporary astronomy. There are many questions to ask in galaxy evolution. For example, the assembly history of galaxy, and what drives the evolution of galaxies, and what's the relation between galaxy and dark matter halos. So in this talk, I will introduce you a powerful method to answer a huge amount of such questions. So traditionally, there are three approaches to study galaxy evolution. So the first two are theoretical study. This hydrodynamic simulation of galaxy formation basically worked forward from first principles. And they tried to predict the galaxy properties and compare to observations. And the semi-analytic model of galaxy formation makes use of the growth of dark matter halos and try to understand the galaxy evolution and the galaxy formation. The third approach works backward from the data and to empirically constrain galaxy evolution. So the difficulty in the theory lies in the baryon-related processes, which include gas dynamics, gas cooling, a star formation, or various feedbacks. So they are collectively called gas astrophysics. So to make a really sweet galaxy, we need all these processes. But many of these processes are poorly understood. Even a theory can give us something correct. We don't know whether they are correct for the correct reasons or not. As an example, let me show you the some analytic model, galaxy formation model prediction, and compare to observation. So the red and blue curves are the prediction from this galaxy formation model for the luminosity function of galaxies. Basically, the abundance of galaxy as a function of their luminosity at the two different epochs, about 3 billion years ago and 5 billion years ago. And the points are the observational data. So we see that there's this agreement between observation and theory. And for the model represented by the red curve, we see the field at both redshift or at both epochs. And the model with the blue curve does a reasonable job at the low redshift. That's because it just tuned its parameter to fit the data at the low redshift. But apparently it failed at high redshift. So the theory of galaxy formation is far from complete. So for the third method, the empirical method, you know, with galaxy surveys, we can try to observe, you know, galaxy properties, the distribution function, for example, distribution of luminosity of galaxies, you know, as a function of redshift, as a function of cosmic time, or the color and the luminosity distribution of galaxy at different times. And this empirical method tries to connect the galaxy populations at different epochs with some simple assumptions and constrain the evolution. So, but the galaxy surveys in general can provide us with a lot of more information than distribution function of galaxies. You know, with large galaxy surveys, we can try to constrain, we can measure galaxy clustering. So today, the method I will introduce is called the halo occupation distribution modeling of galaxy clustering to try to understand the galaxy formation and evolution. So it's a method in between theory and observation. So it makes use of the galaxy clustering and the theory of dark matter growth. So let me just have some introduction about this method. So with contemporary galaxy redshift surveys, such as the Sloan Digital Sky Survey, we can map the galaxy distribution in the universe in greater detail. For example, as shown in the left panel, I show the galaxy distribution in space from the Sloan Digital Sky Survey. So basically, each point in this plot is a galaxy. So a galaxy looks like this. So in a word, so we are observing the bright side, basically the light from stars. But theoretically, we know best the dark side of the universe. We know how, given cosmology, we know how dark matter structure form and evolve, because physics here is simple. It's just gravity. So in this plot, what I show here is a result from n-body simulation, so showing the structure of the dark matter. So the basic unit in the dark matter structure is called the dark matter halo, so which is a bond structure with mean density about 200 of the background of the universe. So intuitive picture of the dark matter halo formation is like this. If we have like a slightly overdense region at early time in the universe, so this overdense region will first expand with the background of the universe. But because it's overdense, its expansion gradually slows down, and finally it stops and gets and turn over and collapse and get visualized, forming the dark matter halo. So you can see, okay, in this plot, you can see, okay, this is a big dark matter halo, there are small dark matter halo, and there are a lot of fine structures within the dark matter halos. So given a cosmological model, we know almost everything about these dark matter halos. We know their abundances, we know their spatial distribution, we know their motion, all as a function of dark matter halo mass. And this dark matter halo is also the site for gravity formation and evolution. So depending on the mass of dark matter halo, the dark matter halo can host a single galaxy, or a pair of galaxies, or group, or cluster of galaxies. So in summary, so we have well-defined observation and a well-defined theory. And we observe the bright side, the stars. And let me remind you that stars are only a small fraction of the baryonic matter. And the baryonic matter is only a small fraction of the total matter content in the universe. So basically, we are observing only a tiny fraction of the matter content of the universe. So it seems hard for the observation and the theory to talk to each other. But if we can really make these two talk to each other, we can learn a lot about galaxy formation and evolution, and answer a lot of questions I just mentioned, and possibly falsify the theory. So, but how could we make them to talk to each other? The key here is clustering. So from the observation, we can measure how a galaxy clustered in space. And also from theory, we know how dark matter halos cluster. So we can use the clustering to make a connection between galaxy and dark matter halos. That's basically the bridge is the halo occupation distribution framework, or in short, HOD. So this halo occupation distribution does, you know, specify how galaxies occupy dark matter halos. It basically has three aspects. The first one is called the PNM, basically the probability of finding n galaxies of a given type in the dark matter halo of visual mass m. Also, we need to know the spatial and the velocity distribution of galaxies inside the halos. Okay, so in my talk, I will try to talk about the HOD modeling of galaxy clustering. So basically, the HOD modeling is just try to make use of the observed galaxy clustering and the known dark matter halo clustering to try to infer how galaxies occupy dark matter halo as a function of galaxy properties and also dark matter halo mass. So from this halo occupation distribution, we can learn a lot about the galaxy formation and the evolution. So before I talk more about HOD modeling, let me emphasize that this halo occupation distribution framework or method is not a galaxy formation model. It's just a tool to empirically infer the relation between galaxy and dark matter halos. And also in this framework, there's no galaxy formation astrophysics involved. So you may say, okay, this appears to be the weakness of the method. But I would argue this is, in fact, the strength of the method. Because by avoiding this gastrophysics, we can really infer something robust from the observation about the galaxy formation and evolution. So let me put the description of this HOD method in a more philosophical way by borrowing some word from the great philosopher of the United States. So this HOD modeling is to make use of known knowns, to probe known unknowns, and to reveal unknown unknowns. So the known knowns here are the observed galaxy clustering and also the theory of dark matter halo evolution. These known unknowns are the relations between galaxies and the dark matter halos. And the unknown unknowns are the properties in galaxy formation and evolution. Okay, so I developed and tested the accurate analytic method to make HOD modeling a practical tool to study galaxy clustering. So I applied this HOD modeling to the Sloan Digital Sky Survey galaxy clustering, and also extended the method to study galaxy evolution. So in my talk, I will first talk about some theoretical expectations for the HOD, and then I will show you the low-res of the result based on the Sloan Digital Sky Survey. And then I will talk about high-res result and talk about how to and what we can learn about galaxy evolution. This will be the focus of the talk. HOD modeling is also very important in using galaxy clustering to constrain cosmology. So although this is not the focus of this talk, I would like to make some remarks at the end of the talk. So let me start from these theoretical expectations of HOD. So any galaxy formation model that makes use of dark matter halo would predict the halo occupation distribution. So I studied this HOD predicted by some analytical galaxy formation model and also hydrodynamic galaxy formation model. So the important lesson we learned that it's very important and physically meaningful to separate the galaxy into central galaxy and satellite galaxy. So the central galaxy here means a galaxy located at the center of the dark matter halo, and the satellite galaxy means the galaxy located elsewhere. So as an example, let me show the mean occupation function as a function of halo mass for sample galaxy more luminous than some like luminosity threshold. For example, for galaxy more luminous than the Milky Way, you know, this is basically the mean number of galaxy as a function of halo mass. You see that it's composed of two parts, a step-like function and a power law-like function. So the step-like function is for central galaxy. So basically above certain halo mass, there's always a central galaxy located at the halo center. And the power law part is for satellite galaxy. So let me just point out some key HOD parameters here. So there is a mass scale called L-mean. Basically the cutoff mass scale here. So basically the characteristic minimum mass of halos that can host the galaxy with this luminosity. Okay. And there's another mass scale that's related to satellites. It's called M1. So it's the mass of a halo on average can host a satellite galaxy above this luminosity. Okay. And also you see this cutoff profile is not very steep, and the width it basically reflects the scatter between galaxy luminosity and the dark matter halo mass. And the bottom panel showed basically the at the fixed halo mass, the number of satellite galaxies, the distribution follows the Poisson distribution. So let me move. Yes?
So you had a PH written underneath one of these boxes. Yes. But what did that refer to?
Oh, okay. So it's a hydrodynamic simulation called smooth particle hydrodynamics. So it's a technique. So based on it's basically a hydrodynamic cosmological simulation to study galaxy formation. Yeah, that's got from the simulation. Yes. So basically, we have a rough idea basically how to parameterize the halo occupation distribution. Okay, so let me talk about the modeling of the galaxy clustering. So the first important success, yes?
You said you didn't want to use any galaxy formation physics.
Yes.
But now you're using a simulation, so.
Okay, so the simulation just gave me, just a rough idea how to parameterize this HOD. But, other than that, I did not use anything from the simulation. Yeah, get the function form. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Okay, so the first important success in the HOD method is in interpreting galaxy two-point correlation function. So galaxy two-point correlation function is basically the Fourier counterpart of the power spectrum of galaxy density field. And the so the correlation function appear to be a power law. So this power law form has been the longest standing quantitative result in galaxy clustering since its first measurement something like 40 years ago. But the thing that the power law does not have, does not have a clear physical meaning. And many efforts have been made to try to understand this feature. But within the HOD framework, however, we need a really fine tuning to keep this two-point correlation function to be a power law. Okay, so let me explain why. So this two-point correlation function can also be interpreted as a pair count. Basically, if the exact probability of finding a galaxy pair at a given separation with respect to a random distribution of galaxies. So it's essentially a pair count. So within the HOD framework, this pair count has two components. Okay, on small scales, two galaxies of each pair come from the same dark matter halo. So we call it a one halo term. And on large scales, two galaxies of each pair can come from different halos. We call this a two halo term. So there is a transition from this one halo term dominant regime to two halo term dominant regime from small scale to large scale. So it's really hard to keep this to be a featureless power law. So it seems that this is the indirect contradiction with the observed power law form of the two-point correlation function. And the observation seems to challenge the HOD method. But with contemporary large galaxy redshift surveys, we can measure this two-point correlation function very accurately. So here I show the correlation function for example, a Sloan galaxy, with magnitude smaller than minus 21. I can think basically for galaxy at least as bright as 1.6 that of the Milky Way. Okay. So we can see, okay, the two-point correlation function is more or less follow power law, but you can see clearly departure from the power law as expected in the HOD method framework. So I basically performed the HOD modeling for this sample and show that this departure from power law basically reflected one halo to two halo transition. And also with the same number of free parameters, this HOD modeling give us a significantly better fit to the data than power law. More importantly, this HOD modeling is physical because it converts this pair count statistics to a relation between galaxies and the dark matter halos. Okay, so I think that's the first important success of this HOD method. So for the and the departure from the power law it has an important implication, especially at high redshift. Let me just mention that a few years ago, Daddy et al. Measured the clustering of a population of high redshift galaxies, and this really small survey. And they can only measure the clustering on small scale. And then they try to assume that the two-point correlation function follows power law and extrapolate it to a really large scale to get the large scale clustering strength. And from the large scale clustering strength, and they assume like one galaxy per halo, they infer a halo mass for these galaxies, they hold the halo mass to be very massive, about 10 to the 13th solar mass. But the puzzle here is like, okay, the density of such halos is much less than the observed galaxy number density. So I performed the HOD modeling of for such a population of galaxies and try to understand the puzzle. And what I find is that there's a strong departure from the power law. So basically, because there are multiple galaxies per halo, the small scale clustering got enhanced. And we can, if we try to extrapolate the small scale clustering to large scale, basically, we get things wrong on large scale. We cannot infer anything about large scale clustering based on small scale clustering with a power law extrapolation. Also, from this work, I also predict basically, for high redshift galaxies, the departure from the power law in the two-point correlation function will be very strong. And later, this prediction has been confirmed. For example, I show Oshii et al. Observations for redshift 4 galaxies. And you can see clear the departure from the power law, just as predicted. Okay, so just let me move back to the low redshift galaxies. For the Sloan galaxies, we have a rich measurement of galaxy clustering as a function of their properties, like color or luminosity. So let me first talk about this luminosity-dependent galaxy clustering. So the luminosity of galaxy just roughly reflect the standard mass of galaxies. We have like a small galaxy, a large galaxy. So my collaborator, Edith DeHavey, made a beautiful measurement of this galaxy clustering as a function of luminosity. So brighter galaxy are more strongly clustered than fainter galaxies. So I performed the HOD modeling and show that we can infer the halo coefficient distribution. And it's not surprising that brighter galaxy residing halos in more massive halos. These more massive halos are more strongly clustered. That explains why brighter galaxy are more strongly clustered. So that's not surprising. But what's surprising is that we infer a real remarkable scaling relation of these two mass scales I mentioned. So mass scale for central galaxy and mass scale for satellite galaxy. So their difference is about a factor of 20. So that means that if we find the Milky Way galaxy, in Milky Way size halos, we need to go to halos about 20 times more massive than Milky Way halo to find the satellite galaxy that's as bright as the Milky Way. So this scaling relation appears to be more or less consistent with the theoretical expectation. And here, the comparison is not an apple to apple, because here's the luminosity, here's the galaxy stellar mass. That's not a really one-to-one mass. But if we can really make them like an apple-to-apple comparison, we'll put very stringent constraints on the theory. And why that there's a scaling relation about 20 times? So the reason is not clear yet. That's like a very interesting topic to be. Okay, so this is basically the halo mass to host a central galaxy at the given luminosity. And the M1 is the halo mass that on average that can host one satellite galaxy brighter than this luminosity. Also, galaxy clustering depends on the color of the galaxy. So the color of the galaxy just roughly reflects the stellar population of the galaxy. So basically, a younger stellar population appear to be bluer, and the older population appear to be redder. So observationally, we find that the red galaxy are more strongly clustered than blue galaxies. And I perform HOD modeling of this color dependence as well. And we found that there is a strong correlation between the color of galaxy and the dark matter halo mass. For example, for the blue galaxy, the central galaxy, that's the number of central galaxies function halo mass. You can see it's really hard for the central galaxy to keep blue in massive halos. And we also found that there are higher red fraction for satellite galaxy. Again, the results appear to be consistent with the theoretical prediction. Again, here it's not a real like apple-to-apple comparison. A real apple-to-apple comparison will allow us to constrain the theory.
Are satellites for each type? Or?
Yeah. So this central blue galaxy, the central red galaxy, the satellite red galaxy, satellite blue galaxy. Okay. So. So here, so basically, with this low redshift clustering data, basically, we learned a lot about the relation between galaxy and dark matter halos. And currently, we are working with the Sloan DR7 data to try to understand this bimodal distribution of galaxies. So basically, in the parameter space extended by the luminosity of galaxy and the color of galaxy, galaxy has like the probability distribution of galaxy has like a few sequences. There's a really tight red sequence and also a little bit diffuse blue cloud. And in between is green valley. So we are trying to understand better this bimodal distribution of galaxies and trying to understand its origin. So we see that applying this HOD method to a low redshift data have teached us a lot about the relation between galaxy and dark matter halo. If we can go to higher redshift, and we can infer the relation between galaxy and dark matter halos at different cosmic times, we can try to learn about the galaxy evolution. So theoretically, we know how dark matter halos form. We know the growth history of dark matter halos. Small dark matter halos merge to form large dark matter halos. And along the merging of the dark matter halos, we have like a gas accretion, star formation, a merger, disruption of galaxies, or morphological transformation. And we want to infer, based on the data, we want to infer all these kind of like galaxy formation processes, as a function of dark matter halo mass. and also as a function of the central or satellite status of this galaxy. So this program is still at its early stage. And so as the first step along the path, I will show you how we study galaxy evolution with a few examples. So the first example I show is based on the HOD modeling of Sloan galaxy. You know, basically that's for galaxy population at a redshift zero, like it is today. And also for galaxy, you know, at redshift one from the Deep Two survey. That's basically the galaxy population about 7.5 billion years ago. So what I show here is basically the modeling result for the Deep Two galaxy and as a function of galaxy luminosity. So the two-point collision function with the curves as the best fit from the HOD model. And on the right is the inferred HOD, so the mean occupation function of galaxy as a function of halo mass. So and at both redshift, this galaxy today and the galaxy in the past, we find the tight correlation between the central galaxy luminosity and the halo mass. So, but I want to you understand that the message here is basically we can infer the halo galaxy connection at this two redshift. So basically, at the redshift zero and the redshift one. Then the question is how to establish an evolution link between galaxy today and the galaxy in the past. So traditionally, there are people assume some simplified assumptions to connect the galaxy today and the galaxy in the past. But this HOD modeling gives us a very sensible way to connect the galaxy today and the galaxy in the past. So again, we know how dark matter halos form, small halos merge to form large halos. So we know how to connect the dark matter halos today to its progenitor halos in the past. So basically, you know, a central galaxy in today's dark matter halo and in its progenitor dark matter halo would be the same galaxy. By the term same, I mean the central galaxy and its most massive progenitor in the past. Okay, let me show you how to make such a connection. So in this panel, I show the dark matter halo mass today and its progenitor dark matter halo mass at redshift 1. So in the mass range we consider here, roughly speaking, dark matter halo grow by a factor of 2 in mass. And from the galaxy clustering, from the HOD modeling of the redshift 0 galaxy, we know how galaxy occupy dark matter halos. Basically, what I show here is basically the stellar mass of central galaxy as a function of today's halo mass. Okay, that's galaxy halo connection. Now, we can also infer this galaxy halo connection for redshift 1 galaxy. This is the stellar mass, stellar mass of central galaxy at redshift 1 and in the redshift 1 halos. Okay, so together with this halo mass, progenitor halo mass relation, we can make a connection between galaxy today and the galaxy in the past. Okay, for example, you know, for central galaxy today with stellar mass about 10 to the 11 solar mass, its progenitor central galaxy at the ratio of 1 would have a stellar mass about 3 times 10 to the 10 solar mass. So we make a connection based on the growth of the dark matter halo. Then with this connection, how can we study galaxy evolution? The idea is like this. So we know how galaxy occupy dark matter halos at the redshift 1 in terms of stellar mass. And we can follow the merging history of dark matter halos, assuming no star formation, and predict, you know, how galaxy occupy dark matter halos in terms of stellar mass at today. Yeah.
Say the stellar mass of the progenitor, you're just talking about the stellar mass in the biggest halo.
Yeah.
So you forget about all the other progenitors, there's just one progenitor.
Okay. But that's a connection. But later when I try to infer about the galaxy evolution, the others also contribute. So this is basically based on what we infer from redshift 1, assuming no star formation, we predict what we have at redshift 0. Okay. But in reality, when halo merge, there are also stars also formed during redshift 1 and redshift 0. So at redshift 0, we have like older stars and also young stars. Okay. But what we can infer, you know, in terms of stellar mass, you know, how galaxy occupy dark matter halo at redshift 0 based on the low redshift data, basically the Sloan data. So the difference of this kind of like predicted HOD and the true HOD tell us the amount of star formation during ratio of 1 and ratio of 0. So let me put this stellar mass connection in the previous plot in the following form. So basically what I show here is basically the central galaxy stellar mass as a function of today's halo mass. And also the stellar mass in the progenitor central galaxy at ratio of 1 as a function of today's halo mass. The ratio of these two curves basically tell us the amount of stars that in place at ratio of 1, okay? For example, for central galaxy today, central galaxy in today's halo with mass about a few times 10 to the 11th solar mass, its progenitor central galaxy at ratio of 1 has about 20% of stars in place. But for a central galaxy in today's halo with mass about a few times 10 to the 12th solar mass, about its progenitor central galaxy has about 1/3 of stellar mass in place at ratio of 1. Then you may ask, how could today's central galaxy get its entire, 100% of stellar mass? There are a few channels, and I use a simple halo growth model to estimate the contribution from each channel. Okay, again, here is basically just the stellar mass in place in the central galaxy, progenitor central galaxy at ratio of 1, and we want to reach this 100% for today's central galaxy. Okay, so this. The central galaxy can merge with the central galaxy in other halos that merge into the host halo of progenitor central galaxy. So we can take this contribution and estimate the contribution to be there. And also, the satellite galaxy can merge onto the central galaxy, and the satellite galaxy in other halos that merge with the host halo can also contribute to the growth of the central galaxy stellar mass. And we add in this contribution. But we still haven't reached this 100%. So there's only one channel left. That's the star formation. So we see we reach a very interesting conclusion. Basically, for central galaxy in low mass halos, a large fraction, a majority, about 70% of stars should form during ratio of 1 and ratio of 0. But for central galaxy in high mass halos, basically a few times 10 to 12 solar mass halos, only a small fraction of stars form during ratio of 1 and ratio of 0. So is this result reasonable or not? And so we can compare to other estimate. So from observations, we can infer the global star formation history of the universe. For example, the data compiled by Fado et al. Indicated about 50% of stars we see in the universe formed after ratio of 1. Basically, this number is well bracketed by the numbers we infer in our study. And also, let me also mention that the Panther et al. Basically performed a stellar population modeling of ratio of 1 Sloan galaxy spectra. So they just try to infer the star formation history of individual galaxies. And our numbers here appear to be consistent with their numbers. Let me emphasize that they are using totally different methods. No, their method has nothing to do with galaxy clustering, nothing to do with dark matter halos. They just perform the stellar population synthesis. So basically they are using what we can see to study galaxy evolution. And they can say nothing about the galaxy merging. But the HOD method, you make use of what we cannot see, but well understood in theory to try to infer the galaxy evolution. So the agreement here is remarkable and encouraging. So it basically enhances our confidence in the dark side of the structure formation and evolution. Okay, so let me mention another example. So so based on this NOAO deep wide field survey. My collaborator, Mac Brown, measured the clustering of this very luminous red galaxy as a function of luminosity and redshift in this survey. So this survey allow us to study galaxy in very massive halos, and I performed the HOD modeling and interpret the data. Let me skip this and mention one interesting result about the satellite evolution. So the idea is again like this. So we have from high redshift clustering, we can infer how galaxy occupy dark matter halos, and we can identify dark matter halos in a big n-body simulation. And we paint some particles as galaxies according to this HOD. And then we can follow the merging of dark matter halos But you assume there's no disruption of galaxies. Basically, each galaxy keeps its own identity. And we can predict the HOD at lower redshift. We call it a passive HOD. But in reality, along the merging of this of galaxies, you know, some galaxies may get tidally disrupted and may disappear. So the true HOD will be different from this passive HOD. But for the true HOD, we can infer from this lower redshift data. Okay, again, the difference of these two will tell us something about here, in particular, about satellite evolution. So basically, we performed this exercise and got a very interesting result. So here, that show so basically that's a high redshift at redshift 0.9, you know, this or HOD fate to the observational data. And if we assume there's no galaxy disruption, you know, we would predict a very high clustering amplitude, but at low redshift. But in reality, the amplitude is much lower. So the difference of this, you know, difference in HOD will tell us about about 1/3 of the satellite galaxy should disappear in massive halos. But you may ask, where did all these satellite galaxies, you know, go? They may undergo merging or disruption. So they may contribute to the growth of the central galaxy, but not by a large amount, given our constraints from, for example, the stellar mass function of this very massive galaxy. And they can also contribute to the intra-cluster light distribution. So basically, the stars of this satellite galaxy get stripped off their parent halo and form a diffuse component in this very massive halo called intra-cluster light. So to better understand, you know, the formation of this intra-cluster light, I initiated the project with McCullen and Doug Rudd. So we basically empirically, we command empirically infer the HOD and a very high resolution n-body simulation of galaxy cluster to study the buildup of the intra-cluster light. So we basically paint the most bound particles as stars and follow the merging history of dark matter halos and track this diffuse component. And you can see, okay, this basically that's the total amount of intra-cluster light as a function of time. And there's a major merger happen at the redshift about 0.5 or 0.6 and contribute a lot to the buildup of the intra-cluster light. Here,
amount of stars in the
So it's roughly about 10 to 20% of the total stellar light in this big cluster. Yeah, in this cluster. Yeah.
So why is there such a dramatic jump?
Because there's a major merger happened. So yeah.
Okay. So this is one. You're tracking one halo set of halos, isn't
that? Yeah. So basically, it tracks the formation of this cluster size of halos from our beginning. Right.
So this is entirely just a simulation, then?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So here is a movie, basically. You can see, okay, so, you know, that shows the diffuse components of the stellar mass. And, okay, so here there's a major merger, and you can see this build-up of this intra-cluster light. And basically, the model prediction, basically, in the parameter space of this, the so-called, the characteristic size of this diffuse distribution called half-light radius, and also the mean surface brightness, you know, inside this radius. So the model prediction seems to fall on top of the observed intra-cluster light the trajectory. So I think it's very encouraging. So this work is still ongoing. We are still working on some details about this intra-cluster light. So we see that, you know, applying this HOD modeling, you know, can enable us to learn a lot about galaxy formation and evolution. But let me make a brief. Yeah.
So how are you? It's going a bit fast. How are you predicting the surface brightness of this? Being modern, I can understand you have a global accounting of there could be, but I don't understand how it's distributed spatially.
Yeah. So the thing that so at the very beginning, so we assign the most bound particle as the star particles. Right, and then follow their evolution, you know, during the merging and during the disruption process, and some of these particles will be stripped off the parent halo and get contributed to the diffuse component of this stellar component in the halo. So that's the intra-cluster light, and we basically know that there are spatial distribution. From this spatial distribution, we can infer the surface brightness, the basically the distribution. Yeah, in the simulation.
But not purely from the HOD models themselves.
Right, so, but the how the model itself give us, you know, how to give us idea how to populate the halos with galaxies.
Yeah, why I say you know the bulk amount.
Right.
You don't get the space. You can't get the spatial distribution.
Right, but the spatial distribution is from the simulation. Yeah, from the simulation from the tidal disruption. But there is only like only dark matter here. So there's no. But we can some dark matter particles as stuff.
So question. So if I want to understand, where is the hard model in this picture?
Is that
the initial conditions of the simulation has a hard model?
Right.
And that's the only thing.
Yes. Okay. So basically, no. Basically, not very. So basically, whenever a halo merges onto larger halo, we pin some particles as according to its mass, we pin some particles as star particles. Given that we know the HOD of
you paint new star particles.
No, paint some dark matter particles as star particles. Most bound dark matter particles as star particles.
But in the simulation, do you have a star formation?
No, star formation.
It's just passive.
Yeah, passive.
So then, in principle, then it should be inconsistent with observations today because there is no star formation. I mean, you already said there is a lot of star formation.
Yeah, but the thing that the time we paint the dark matter halo is when the smaller halo merge onto the bigger halo. Yeah. At this point, we paint the some particles as star particles. So
okay.
After they merge into the halo, so it's really quick for the star formation to shut off. So there may be some contribution from these young stars, but not by a large amount. Okay, so let me just, how much time do I have?
15.
Okay, good. So, we see that, HOD modeling can, let us learn about the galaxy formation evolution, but it's also important in modeling cosmology, in constraint cosmology. So let me just make some remarks here. So not so long time ago, there's a huge worry about using galaxy clustering to study cosmology. Because we don't have a perfect theory of galaxy formation. You know, we don't know whether two different cosmological models can produce the same galaxy population or not. If the difference in cosmological models can be masked by the galaxy population, we would learn nothing about the cosmology from galaxy clustering. So within the HOD framework, we can connect the galaxy population to cosmology through the dark matter halo population. Together with the HOD description. So we can have a better understanding about whether there's a degeneracy between galaxy populations in different cosmological models. Okay. So as I will show you later, it's not true that the difference in the cosmological models can be completely masked by the galaxy population. So intuitive understanding of why, galaxy clustering can help us confirm cosmology is shown here. So let's consider three cosmological models and with the same initial phase. Okay, so the dark points here are for dark matter, and the green points here are for galaxies that populate into dark matter halos. So the top two cosmological models differ in the matter content, the matter density parameter, omega matter, but they have the same normalization of the matter fluctuation amplitude, so characterized by this number called sigma 8. Okay, so the dark matter distribution of dark matter halos in these two cosmological models would be the same, except that halos in this model is about three times more massive than a corresponding halo in this model. So we can try to populate these dark matter halos in a way that the corresponding halos have the same HOD. Then we will end up with the same galaxy spatial distribution. You may say, okay, that seems that we cannot tell the difference in these two cosmological models apart. But any dynamically sensitive measurement about galaxy clustering can tell these two models apart. For example, if we can have the measurement of the halo mass from gravitational lensing, or we can measure the peculiar velocity field from redshift distortion, so we can tell these two models apart. Okay, the two models on the right differ in this normalization parameter, but they have the same density parameter. So basically, in these two models, the halo mass function or the halo abundance of the function halo mass will be different. So in this, in the model with lower sigma H, we'll have fewer massive halos. So if we try to populate this, the dominant halos in these two models, such that, you know, more or less, you know, to reproduce the spatial clustering of galaxy galaxies. So we will need to populate more galaxies in massive halos in this cosmology than in that cosmology. That means we will have like a different mass to light ratio in these massive halos. So again, we can tell these two cosmologic models apart. So I performed a more systematic study about HOD modeling and the cosmology. So what I show by considering a lot of the clustering statistics, you know, including this two-point correlation function, and also like the halo visual mass and the cross correlation between galaxy and the matter. So what I show here is basically the response of each of this clustering observable, you know, to the cosmological parameter and the HOD parameter. Basically, the fractional change of the observable as we have a fractional change in the cosmology or HOD parameter. And the cosmology parameter here, you know, include omega matter, the matter density parameter, and also the shape and the amplitude of the matter fluctuation power spectrum. So the circle here does show the response. Okay, so open circle for positive response, and the filled circle for negative response. And the size of the circle reflects the magnitude, basically the sensitivity of the observable to this cosmological or HOD parameter change. So what we learn here is basically the response caused by the cosmological parameter is different from the response from the that's caused by the HOD parameter. So in fact, there's no linear combination of the HOD caused response that can mimic the cosmology caused response. So the conclusion here is that the HOD and the cosmology are not degenerate with respect to galaxy clustering. We can try to constrain the HOD, basically how galaxy occupies dominant halos, and also cosmology simultaneously from galaxy clustering data. And by making full use of this galaxy clustering data, you know, this HOD modeling can greatly amplify the power of galaxy ratio survey to constrain cosmology. So let me just mention a few applications of this HOD modeling and to constrain cosmology. So let me just mention that, okay, we perform this, you know, HOD modeling for the clustering of galaxy and the mass to light ratio of large scale structure. And so we infer a combination of sigma 8 and omega matter, you know, is about 0.75. So at that time, we only have like a WMAP 1 result. Now with WMAP 1 plus some other methods, you know, people infer that this combination should be much higher than what we get here. So at that time, you know, the results from this large scale structure or galaxy clustering, you know, caused a tension between, you know, the HOD method and the CMD-based method. But later, when WMAP 3 released the results, you know, we found, okay, so our result is fully consistent with the new result. So this is, but we got the results before the release of WMAP 3. So that's really encouraging. So looking into the future, the Sloan Digital Sky Survey, the final data set is there. And so we can, also there are a lot of galaxy ratio surveys at different redshift. So all this data, you know, would enable us to learn a lot about a galaxy formation evolution, basically by performing a systematic study over a large range of redshift through the HOD modeling. So we expect to learn in detail about the continuous history of stellar mass growth separated into mergers and star formation as a function of halo mass. So when I mentioned this Deep 2 and the Sloan galaxy comparison and studied galaxy evolution. There we can only infer, okay, we have this much amount of star formation over this redshift range. But if we have like a very fine redshift bins, we can try to infer the continuous growth history of stellar mass. So that would be a strong test bed for galaxy formation models. And we can also have a better understanding about the origin and evolution of this bimodal distribution of galaxies in this color luminosity space. So looking further into the future, the Sloan 3 is underway. So one of its major projects called the BOSS is trying to measure the cosmic expansion from the baryon acoustic oscillation feature with 1.5 million luminous red galaxies. So this baryon acoustic oscillation feature appear to be a bump in the galaxy clustering. So basically, it said, okay, on scales about 150 megaparsec, you know, the galaxies are slightly more strongly clustered. And this scale can be used as a standard ruler to measure the geometry and the cosmic expansion history. So this LRG sample in the Sloan appear to be the galaxy sample that have the most power in constraining cosmology, either from the large scale power spectrum or the BAO feature. So I performed the HOD modeling of this luminous red galaxy and explained the shape of the power spectrum and also helped to recover the matter fluctuation power spectrum on smaller scales. So this luminous red galaxy would be a very important target for galaxy surveys, you know, in the next decade. And also, like this luminous red galaxy is very important for us to understand the evolution of galaxies in a massive end, since these are really massive galaxies. So with Sloan 3, we can have a much better understanding of this very massive galaxy. And also, we have ambitious surveys like a dark energy survey or LRST pan-STARRS. Although the motivation of such surveys may not be galaxy formation and evolution, so they will produce a huge amount of data. You know, besides study cosmology, especially dark energy, the statistical power of this data would allow us to study galaxy formation and evolution in great detail. Okay, so before the end of my talk, let me get back to the questions, you know, mentioned in my third slide. So with HOD modeling, I think we largely answered the question about the relation between galaxy and dark matter halos, and partly answered the question like the assembly history of galaxy. And for the origin of the bimodal distribution, you know, is yet to be answered. But with the I think we will answer this question with the HOD modeling. So with the improvement of the data and the HOD modeling, we would make a significant progress in understanding galaxy formation and evolution in answering a lot of such questions. So here's my summary slide, and I hope I have convinced you that HOD modeling of galaxy clustering at different redshift is a new direction in studying galaxy formation and evolution, and a powerful method to test the galaxy formation models. And I'll stop here and for questions. Thank you.
This is the main focus of your talk. But have you tried, I mean, you put up a big matrix of all those derivatives, essentially, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could imagine just trying to solve those set of equations given some data. Essentially, there's you have some vectors of observables and vectors of parameters.
Yes. So I haven't done that, but you know what we did is just, you know, basically a forward method. So basically, given the data, we try to fit it and try to simultaneously infer the HOD and the cosmology. That's what
right.
We did.
So what I'm asking.
Yeah.
Solve that.
Essentially that's basically solving that, but you know, it's kind of like forward modeling. Yeah.
I think that's what they did, but I'm not sure. Is that what you're asking?
Sort of. I mean, I think you perturbed your models so you know how they behave around some best fit models.
Yes.
So you could do it, you could invert it, I suppose. Instead of going forwards, you could go backwards.
Yes. But you know, this can only give you some like a local behavior, right? If we want to see, for example, the degeneracy between cosmological parameters, I think a better to just do like the fit from the beginning, right?
So my problem with this method of constraining cosmology that you're doing is that
you are assuming this particular functional form for HOD and with a bunch of parameter dimensions. And let's say that tomorrow Planck, or like 2 years from now, Planck comes out with some, there's the parameters that are inconsistent with parameters that you get from HOD. Now, does it mean that you just go and add more parameters to HOD? Or is it something? So, I mean, that's the thing. I think that's what everybody would say. People would say, I would just add more parameters to HOD.
No, Well, okay, so in fact, you know, when I performed this cosmology and HOD study, you know, the HOD parameterization is much flexible than the HOD I present here. So like, you know, for example, we did not assume like to be a power law, you know, just like, you know, a Splunk curve, for example, with many free parameters.
Yeah.
So even with such, you know, enough of freedom, you know, we still can constrain this HOD and the cosmology separately. The key here is basically, you know, you need to use different combinations of the clustering statistic. You cannot only use like a spatial clustering. You need to use, for example, dynamical measurement, all these things. So you may like reproduce, you know, with different cosmology, reproduce like a spatial clustering with different cosmology. But, you know, any, for example, dynamic sensitive measurement will break this difference. So the key is to try to use different galaxy clustering, you know, complementary galaxy clustering statistics to try to do this. But I don't think there will be like a real conflict. As we showed, you know, for example, the conflict with WMAP data, you know, at the very beginning. It turned out, you know, the WMAP 1.
I argue you got lucky that time, but next time it may not go away.
So. How do you know? Yeah. The thing that, okay, so I think in the future, there's some uncertainty with like Hilbert model, right? But you know, we can try to use the simulation directly. You know, we performing the fit use the simulation directly to get avoid this uncertainty. But like as I said, the HOD has enough of degrees of freedom, so I don't worry too much about the HOD. The only worry I have is basically this environmental dependent effect. That's one thing to worry. But this can also be incorporated in the extended version of the HOD framework.
Any questions?
Okay. Well, Shane will be here all day today and tomorrow. So if we're going down to lunch in a little while. If anybody would like to join us, please feel free. Thank you.
Thank you.